Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Filled with odd fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Park.
But yeah, I mean, we were starting with your pop. I don't know. I was like, your pop socket caught my attention that you like Jurassic Park. It's funny for me, and I'm talking to Kira Metcalf, very talented songwriter, musician. We're just diving right in. But the thing that caught my attention, it was like, oh, because Jurassic Park is like a pretty big movie. But then it's like when you see somebody that has a thing, I was like, oh, I wonder if Kira likes Jurassic Park. And then
when I saw, doesn't have the nostalgia factor for me because I only watched it a few years ago for the first time.
Really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but then for like a number of reasons, I became obsessed. And I do this, you know, I'm very visual and I'll become obsessed with the movie and I'll just watch it like every day. I need to watch it. And yeah, it was Jurassic Park and it was also summer when I first started. So it was rainy, it was like torrential downpour and it felt very fitting.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, interesting.
And like tropical. And I was drawn to Jeff Goldblum. I cannot lie. And I think that's partially why I started watching it. And there were so many layers to it that I just couldn't stop.
Oh, interesting. So yeah, you didn't grow up with it.
Well, I grew up loving dinosaurs.
Oh, okay.
Like, loving dinosaurs. And there was a BBC series called Walking with Dinosaurs. It's incredible. So literally a one time a local video store was going out. I feel like I'm dating myself here, but the local video store was going out of business and they had the VHS tapes of Walking with Dinosaurs.
Oh, that's cool.
So we got them for, I don't know, like $5. And that was a facial thing that I had. And in my memory, it's David Attenborough recording it, but that might not be true at all.
Yeah, I feel like it's maybe Kenneth Branagh, maybe, but that might have been
that
a different one.
That wouldn't shock me. And, you know, I grew up in New York, so I was close enough to the museum that was the only museum I ever wanted to go to. And my parents were really good about taking us to museums in the city, even though we lived in Long Island.
The American Museum of
Natural History. Yeah. And just looking up at a T-Rex, there's something so masterful about that, especially when you're a kid. You know, it's like,
oh, it's terrifying, but also like so exciting.
Oh my God. Well, so that's why I'm kind of glad that I didn't watch Jurassic Park as a kid, because I think it would have scared me out of it too much. Because
oh,
I was so easily, I'm still so easily scared. Yeah.
Oh, that's...
But
no, I could see that. I mean, you know, there is an aspect to, you know, in anything that we, it's like, that's a real thing. And it's like, you know, like people who saw Jaws and were like scared of sharks. And it's like, oh, well, there's no reason to be scared. I mean, not that there's no reason to be scared of sharks.
Two things. One, I watched Beetlejuice when I was like five, and I thought it was the scariest movie that's ever happened, because it's scary to like a 5-year-old.
Yeah, there is scary stuff. Yeah.
So it took me a while to actually want to watch it. And, you know, it's like something you can come back to. And I guess I probably could have with Jurassic Park. But the other thing is I was actually recently reading an article about the relationship between like the scientific community and Jurassic Park, mm-hmm. and, you know, the book and the movie, and how everything kind of planned out and fell into place. And they actually, there were scientific experiments that were attempting to do what they were doing in Jurassic Park while the movie came out. And like, it was planned around the release, or they're not sure if it was planned around the release,
yeah.
but then they basically were kind of inspired to see if it was possible, and it's not.
It's funny for me where it's like, you know, because there's only so many ways that you can bring dinosaurs back with humans.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, science brought them back, time portal, time travel stuff,
right.
alternate universe stuff or whatever.
Totally.
But I always thought it'd be funny. It's like, oh, dinosaurs finally were brought back because Jurassic Park inspired scientists so much. Because in real life, yeah, like when Jurassic Park came out, like it inspired people to get into science and get into paleontology and stuff.
Absolutely. So the thing that they were finding based on this random article I read, but it was so hard. A, the half-life of DNA is such that it wouldn't last.
Oh, wow.
And also that there was like the contamination was so easy. It was so, it was so easy for the samples to get contaminated literally by anything.
Yeah.
So that's why it was really hard to extract. But it did encourage people to start trying to do kind of like genetics to bring back other extinct species
that
were extinct for less long. So that like they're trying that with mastodon.
Oh,
they're trying that like 2 years ago. So they might be able to bring back animals that are extinct, but also not so extinct that they like we could still extract their DNA.
Well, yeah, they recently just found a dinosaur with like its like some of its guts intact and stuff too.
That's amazing.
Because it was one of the armored dinosaurs. So it's like they think its actual like armor plating helped keep some of it more intact than, you know, because usually like nowadays, at least we're finding like skin and stuff and impressions and things. But
and that they had feathers. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's interesting. Because, I interviewed a scientist about like each step of the way. Basically, like at every stage, could this be possible? And it's just like, nope, here's all the obstacles.
Right.
There's so many obstacles and stuff.
There are so many obstacles. But also, I think it's also part of us wanting to preserve ourselves, you know, and like,
I mean, we're making robots that can outsmart us now. So it's
and I also think like there's so, you know, extinction is scary. It's scary to think about. And, you know, we want to think that that's like something we can reverse in some way.
Yeah.
And maybe we can.
I see what you're saying. By like, if we can figure out how to bring dinosaurs back, maybe we can find a way to like succumb from extinct from our own extinction.
From our own extinction, or, you know,
use less straws.
Exactly. Or, you know, if we've like, you know, killed off all the rhinos, we can potentially bring them back and repopulate.
Yeah. And at least now with some animals, they know they're like literally these are the last rhinos.
Yeah.
So we're going to collect as much semen as possible and eggs so that it's like if we can learn how to clone more successfully than I guess because we have.
Yeah.
And it's not always been the most successful or whatever. But then we can like bring back extinct species. And then if we find a way to bring back their habitat, then maybe we could actually not return things to normal, but just at least start to like put the pieces back together.
Yeah. And the cool thing they were saying about bringing back mastodon, where they were going to kind of merge it with some elephant DNA, they don't really know communally what they were like.
Yeah.
So if you're putting like a mastodon in with a bunch of elephants, like, are they going to be able to interact? Or like, are you going to be able to...
Who's this old guy?
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
But when we throw everyone in the mix together, like,
what actually is going to happen. Like, how are they going to interact? And
oh, yeah.
Also just like, what germs do they have or do we have that can hurt them? And, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, like, I don't know. I think there's so the fun thing about Jurassic Park is I feel like it just brings up so much about our planet.
Yeah.
That we really need to think about.
Yeah. That. What got you, because you said you like dinosaurs, but so then what finally inspired you to finally actually go and watch the movie for the first time?
I'm not going to lie to you. It was Jeff. Like, I was having a Jeff Goldblum moment, and I wanted to watch everything he was in. And also, I love Laura Dern.
Yeah.
And I was really getting into her movies, and I'd recently watched Blue Velvet, and I was like, let's see Laura Dern in action. How have I not seen this?
Here we go.
Yeah, how have I not seen this? And
that's such quite a thing to go from Blue Velvet to Jurassic Park.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, she's so badass in that movie. And,
in Blue Velvet.
I mean, oh, God.
In Jurassic
she,
Park.
You know what? She gets it done in Blue Velvet, too.
It's true.
She, you know, Kyle's doing a lot and she's there for him. But, you know, I also find, like, with a lot of older movies or even movies that aren't that old, you know, you hope they can hold up.
Yeah, of course.
And I was really surprised at certain ways I thought it was kind of progressive.
Yeah.
And then also, not to, like, be that person, but I was really frustrated with Jurassic World and the, like, high heel controversy.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Just because I'm like. Like, Laura Dern's wearing, like, she's wearing boots. Like, she's working. She's ready to go. And I've worn a lot of heels in my tenure as a person. And I just don't, like, it just seemed unfeasible and, like, a step back almost from what it was.
And because Bryce Dallas Howard talks about that that was, like, her choice.
Huh.
This is a little tie into the podcast. When you talk about communication, I think it's always about communicating things to an audience. And if they can't communicate the idea that this character is stubborn and wants to do it this way. Like if it just comes off as like, oh, the director probably just like, oh, I just wanted her to be sexy and look good.
Right.
If people are confused about your meaning, then it probably wasn't done right. Even if, you know.
You know, it's so funny. And, you know, I'm into a lot of different fantasy things. You know, like I love Lord of the Rings. I love Jurassic Park. And it's funny for me because, like, continuity seems so important that, like, the dinosaurs aren't what's taking me out of it. It's the fact that she's doing all this and
taking me
out of it, you know? And I think that, like, especially, like, you know, I'm sure a lot of Game of Thrones fans feel the same way, where it's like if you establish a universe where, like, these are the rules and some of them apply to, like, what you're in, then that has to say the same for everything else to be believable, I guess.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I think it makes sense. I think that's why Zara, Katie McGrath's character's death is so, when it first came out, it felt so jarring. Like, I kind of like it now almost for kind of the schlock value of it's so over the top.
Right.
But it is weird when, like, because when the director's intentions is like, oh, the idea is like anybody could die, nobody's safe. But it's weird when, like, this female character's death is like longer than the amount of lines she has in the movie.
Yes.
That's where it's like, I don't know if your intentions match up with actually what's on screen.
Right.
Because it's like when Gennaro, like the lawyer dies, it's like we're rooting for him to die. But I don't think we're like Zara is like every rich person hates their assistant. But it's like people our age were like, we're Zara. We're the person who's being eaten instead of our boss, you know?
Literally, absolutely.
And so the distinction between your between your intentions and what's there, where it's like in Jurassic Park, because, you know, in the book, Lex was like not a hacker, not anything like that. And Steven Spielberg really wanted to, you know, put kids in danger, but also empower them in a way that felt realistic. And
I think
you don't feel like the kids are like superheroes. They're just like,
no,
you know, they're kids. So they're going to scream and cry, but then they're also like going to be smart enough that a kid that age, even in the 90s, would know how to use computers over the adults.
Absolutely. And I don't know. That's also what was, even as like an adult watching, it was empowering to watch, you know, like here's this badass girl who's, you know, like, who can do it under pressure, too. But it felt, like, that felt believable to me. I also, like, raptors felt believable to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Wait, so did you see Jurassic Park and then Jurassic World?
No, I saw Jurassic World first.
Wow.
Isn't that
weird? So interesting. I love that. I always like it when I get to talk to people who see things out of order.
Out of order. Like, and I'm not that person. I am an in order, watch the whole series type of person. But I'm all out of order. Actually, I went on the... think I went on the ride first.
Oh, really? In Florida
yeah.
or
yeah,
here?
Yeah, in Florida, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, when I, in like 2012, and then I watched Jurassic World.
So ride, Jurassic Park, the ride, yes. Jurassic World, then...
then Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So... did that inform your watching of Jurassic Park at all, seeing World first? Because I'm just, my mind's like,
yeah.
kind of thinking like, how would I, because you're seeing a story that's saying that they're set, you know, 20 years after the first thing and they're bringing this new park and.
Yeah. You know, what I really liked about Jurassic World is the kind of, you know, human animal relationship that Chris Pratt has.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I'm an avid animal lover and yeah. I also would want to believe that there's a world in which you could have a relationship or like a real bond. I'm also, you know, I loved Steve Irwin
as yeah, yeah.
too. So there's this also having a relationship with animals that will like take you out.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. It's like, that was always my thing with Steve Irwin too, is that like people would criticize him, but it's like, you haven't spent 20 years studying these animals. How would
no.
you know what the best way to handle this is? Like, and he also respected, it's that idea, like the original Jurassic Park, it's like all about the, you know, respecting animals and stuff. And it's like
yeah.
knowing, even if you're putting yourself in danger, it's like, you know, the risks, you know,
yeah.
like you're not being characters in Jurassic Park. Like are, if anybody's being punished, it's almost because they're not respecting that,
which
you know?
I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I know maybe in somebody's minds they're monsters, but I'm like, no, but in real life they were actual animals.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you advocate for them no matter what, even if they are dangerous, you know?
Absolutely. God, I love that so much. Yeah. And I even think, you know, there's so many animals that depending on who you are and how you communicate when your relationship with them is, like, they're going to act very differently. And I would like to think that that would be the same for dinosaurs.
Yeah, I mean, our cats can eat us or will eat us.
Definitely. Yeah. My cat, when I die, my cat will eat me.
By the way, I was like, we didn't talk about this on the podcast, but your cat's name is Blue.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that,
I mean,
too.
You got her before Jurassic World. But
I did. But then when I saw that, I was like, oh, my cat is a little, she's a little raptor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so it's obviously, I understand I'm not being like totally dismissive. I mean, it is about degrees. There is a big difference between a T-Rex and a house cat. But
yeah, but when you think about pit bulls, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of controversy over pit bulls. And with a lot of dogs, too, I think it's, you know, it's we have these animals in our house that like come from wolves. You know,
yeah,
they have a lot of instincts going on there. There's a lot, especially if they're big dogs or muscly dogs, you know, and it takes a lot of effort to understand them, to understand their signs and to know how to communicate with them. And
yeah, these animals are just being animals unless they're like, you know, I think the newer Jurassic movies introduce like the monsters that are actually created by scientists and stuff. But
yes.
even more so, it's like, then I feel even more sorry. Like
absolutely.
That's part of Frankenstein, right? Is you're supposed to feel bad for the monster. Like,
holy.
Which is like, I feel bad for these like
hybrid creatures that didn't ask to be here.
Like, yeah, yeah, it's like, I don't, have you ever seen Alien Resurrection?
No.
Alien Resurrection was like, it's the cheesy Joss Whedon one.
Oh, yes. Okay.
That the director of Amelie mm-hmm. directed. But like, there's a scene where like Ripley sees like all of her clones and they're like these half alien half human hybrids and they're like, kill me, like,
oh god,
like, it's like I feel like the same way about like the Indominus Rex, like it's this creature that like didn't ask to be born, didn't
yeah.
ask to be made into a monster, and it's just like, so it's like I can't get mad at it for, I certainly don't want it to be eating people, but like you know, I can't necessarily, like, I mean, then that's whole Chris Pratt's whole point in the movie, like that's Owen's point, it's like this thing doesn't know what it is and
yeah.
it's just like gonna, we can't all of a sudden be like, what, you know, like,
how dare you? Well, yeah.
How dare you?
And I feel that about all animals,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like I give a disclaimer for anyone who meets my cat that like,
I mean, other than dolphins, maybe dolphins are evil.
Well, the dolphins will do some crazy
yeah, yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway.
No, but yeah, you know, I give a disclaimer of like, she's adorable. She will want to be pet at a certain point. But like, if you touch her where she doesn't want to be touched or she's done being pet, like she'll turn on you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, can I like curse on this podcast?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like you can, but. It's funny. I feel like I curse all the time, and now all of a sudden, it's like I don't know.
No, you can. You can. We'll these fucking dinosaurs. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but she'll. Yeah, and like you just. I don't know. It's like people too. You know, you have to read people's signs. And
yeah, yeah.
I don't.
But
know.
Yeah, like dinosaurs can't go to trial.
No.
For murder. Like they're just hungry.
Yeah.
And then the monsters are just created to be that way. So it's like you're basically like, I don't know. It's like creating a weapon or something.
Well, right. And also, like, we have the, you know, cognitive function to understand morality in a way that animals don't.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're really not, you know, like that's why it's always so sad when people get into, you know, like someone like Harambe.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I feel like getting in touch with all of that, with like how, I don't know.
Well, I feel like, I mean, to me, I think that's like, I definitely owe my love of dinosaurs and Jurassic Park as a kid for me to appreciate this stuff. You know,
yeah.
I think like anything, like getting into science, I think it's like when I spoke at DinoFest this year, I said something of like, you know, dinosaurs are almost like a way for adults to like stay in touch with those kind of interesting things and those questions and curiosities and everything. And so it's like that stuff is important to you because it isn't necessarily, it's not necessarily like this doesn't affect our everyday life. I mean, I guess it affects the way we talk to our cats or whatever, you know,
my everyday life, but
you know, it's like,
no, totally.
It's more annoying when people are very dismissive of all this stuff. And it's like, but it actually like does matter.
No, of course. Then, you know, that's why people write books and make movies is also for allegory.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know? No, it's because this stuff is interesting.
Yeah. And I'm also, that's why you know, the thing that I also loved about Jurassic World is that there was one episode of Walking with Dinosaurs that was like the ocean episode. And they had, tell me what it's called.
The Mosasaur? Or did they have like a plesiosaur or like another type of swimming marine reptile?
But it was the one that jumps out of
The Mosasaur. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But they called it something else.
Well, I feel because there's like a whole, it's almost like, you know, like whales. It's like there's like a bunch of different kinds. I forget what the other, like there's like Leopleurodon, I think.
No, it was.
But I think of the unicorn, the Charlie the Unicorn.
Oh, like, my God.
Leopleurodon, Charlie. You know, like that's what I think of when they're like all in the same.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm like, listeners, I'm doing like the family tree of like species to genus or whatever. Like,
yes.
They're all in the same thing.
It
they're all marine reptiles.
A pleurodon of some sort. But that was the scene that I always loved because they had this, you know, they had, I think, a T-Rex, but standing on the water, just watching, and you know something ominous. Like, it's so ominous, and you don't know what's about to happen. And then it just, like, launches itself out of the water and just takes him out. And it was the most exciting thing in the whole world. So when I saw that that was going to be an aspect of Jurassic World, I was like, I have to see this. This has to happen. And there's your nostalgia.
Yeah. You're like, I'm nostalgic for sea creatures that eat people on land.
I never said I was a cool kid.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, you said, like, was it because, like, your parents took you to, because that's the thing I always appreciate as a kid. Like, my parents, my dad, like, took me to museums and stuff a lot growing up. And so.
I was a big Animal Planet kid.
Okay.
You know, and we were.
Did you have, like dinosaur books and animal books and toys and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I was really, my big thing was like cat. I mean, I'm all cats the time. So, you know, definitely like there's that part of the Museum of Natural History that's just like taxidermy. And I loved it as a kid. I don't want anything to do with hunting or anything, but it's thrilling to be able to be that close to something that you know was once alive and you're never going to get to be close to it.
Yeah.
And it seems almost like more humane that I don't know how they got them. I would like to think they're ethically sourced taxiderms.
Well, and at this point now, it's...
Right, they've been there so long.
Yeah, it's like hard to get mad at. I mean, there's a lot of other things to get mad at about those scientists from the 1800s that it's like, it's...
But, you know, I think interacting with animals and especially extinct animals and nature, like that was just... My parents were very good at exposing me to that. And also we were, you know, our family vacations were very like hikey, camping, whitewater rafty kind of stuff. So we were really getting in there. And actually, so this past year, I went to Puerto Rico and I went to El Yunque National Park, which is this huge rainforest. And whole time, I was just like, I am in Jurassic Park and we're driving.
I mean, that's me anywhere I go. I mean,
anytime it rains and there's lush greenery, I'm like, I'm in Jurassic Park.
No, totally. Well, yeah. I mean, even in Hawaii, when I was at locations in Jurassic Park, but even just anywhere around it is. I like outdoors and stuff. I guess I'm like almost not much of a jungle person, if only just because of like all the insects and stuff.
Not an insect person. Actually, I'm becoming.
Not a mosquito person.
Definitely not a mosquito person.
I only like them when they're in amber, you know?
Exactly. The more environmentalist-y I get, the more I am okay with insects. And also the more I love like plants.
Oh, yeah. I've handled tarantulas at this point now.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Did you have like zoo books and stuff as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Zoo books and, National Geographic had a kids magazine that I was getting for a while in the early 2000s. It was a lot of Animal Planet on. And they had a lot of kid shows, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I think I love Horseshoe Crab so much, too, because you just know they were there. Like, so, you know, like, if your parents saw a band that you really like, but you couldn't see anymore, then you're like, oh, what was it like to be there?
Yeah.
I'm just going to, like, hit up a Horseshoe Crab.
You're like, hey, you've been around since before the time of the dinosaurs. That's fine.
You hung out with Megalodon. Like, how was that?
Yeah, how was hanging out with there was just like volcanoes on the planet. It was just a whole ocean.
Literally. Pangaea. How was Pangaea?
Yeah. Pangaea sounds pretty dope.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Oh, wait. So have you ever watched the shows about Megalodon during Shark Week?
I definitely have in the past. I'm definitely a person that just throws on Animal Planet throws on Planet Earth, you know, just to have it on all the time.
So like during Shark Week, which I think is on Discovery Channel, I think.
Yeah, Discovery Channel.
There's always like, you know, it's come to the thing where like they have to just kind of like fill time during the week and they'll always do like one show that really feels like the Finding Bigfoot of shark shows. So it's like, or like Ghost Hunters where they're I think I heard something and they're like in a boat or like in like a submarine or something and they're like, it must be Megalodon. And then they have like an obviously CGI like fin go by and I'm like, who do they think is watching?
I mean, it makes sense. I'm surprised there's no ghost animals. They're just ghost cats. I feel like people have talked about ghost cats and ghost dogs. But why aren't we talking about like ghost dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs? Probably is.
Yeah. It's just weird. It's just, or do you think that they've already been done haunting? Because it's like.
Maybe.
Because I was listening to.
I'd be pretty bitter if I was a dinosaur.
And you're like still around after millions of years. Well, yeah, because I think about it. It's like if you think about all the ghosts that are kind of like haunting anything nowadays. We're recording this in October, so it's.
Yeah, exactly. It's spooky season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's like, you know, that ghost from the Victorian era. But if you think about it, it's like, you know, dinosaurs have been dead for over 65 million years. So maybe they were ghost dinosaurs, but it's just like. Ghosts only last.
Birds, you know.
Yeah, but we don't know the like the lifespan of a ghost. You know, like how long does a ghost haunt somewhere?
What's the half life of a ghost?
But do you think like maybe like in the Cretaceous period there's like Stegosaurus ghosts like haunting? They're like, what is this weird dinosaur that doesn't because it died in the Jurassic? You know, it's just like
I think so. I'm gonna say yes.
I love the idea of ghost dinosaurs haunting other dinosaurs.
That's gonna be the next show. It's gonna be Ghost Hunters Dinosaur Edition.
Yes, and I love this idea.
I'll do it.
I think that would be pretty scary. Like you just, it's like they're like, you know, there's the scene in Ghost Hunters where they're like listening to the tapes and you're like, oh, it's like, wow.
I also, I'm very excited because once I get back to New York, we're planning on doing a haunted walking tour of Coney Island.
Oh, wow.
So we should do, you know, like a haunted walking tour of like.
But I feel like museums are haunted all the time.
Holy. All museums are haunted. I'm that person that, like, if ever I'm in a cemetery, not that I'm often in cemeteries, but, like...
You're hanging out a lot of cemeteries.
I'm really not. But, like, I just want to see, like, you know, when we went to Ireland, we would tour some, you know, just, like, old sites and old churches that are usually attached to grave sites or, you know, in D.C., things like that.
Yeah.
Or in Boston, too. There's some really good old ones. But I always want to see, like, the oldest one, which is the best part about, you know, you can see the oldest rock and you're like, that. And that's the great thing about fossils.
Well, yeah, the Greenwich Observatory in London has, like, one of the oldest, forget the right terminology, sorry, meteorite, asteroid, but it's like, you know, it's like 3 billion years old. And you're just like, I mean, my instinct is just to be like,
I know, literally.
I'm like leaning my tongue into like, I want to lick this thing that's 3 billion years old. You know what I mean?
I want to touch it so badly. I just, you know, and I think,
it's not good. We can't touch the paintings, but
no,
can't touch the bones. But
I'm becoming such like a nature hippie person in a way that I did not anticipate myself becoming.
And I was like, you're from New York. Like, that's so interesting.
I live in Brooklyn.
Maybe that's the stereotype. I don't know. But
I live close to Prospect Park, which is really, I love that, you know, and I've started doing some research into like what dinosaurs were in New York. And it's kind of hard to find, but they found some in New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Not that long ago.
The couple times I've been to New York, because New York has been in so many like disaster movies.
Yeah, totally.
The few times I've been to New York City, I only just think of like, I'm just like imagining Godzilla, like walking through the streets. Like
completely.
In my brain, like it's like, remember in school when they had like the transparency thing? It's like, to me, it's just like overlaid. Like
I love
just
that.
Overlay like visions of like Godzilla and Cloverfield and
oh my god,
and like Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know. I feel like, especially after all the Marvel movies came out, it's weird to see somewhere you live also completely destroyed.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, like to me, it's always been interesting to like. I feel like New Yorkers, it's like you're so used to your city being destroyed all the time.
Yeah. But I mean, that's why I really love the natural spaces in the city.
Well, I listened to there was a great Stuff You Should Know about the history of Central Park, which I thought was really fascinating.
Yes.
And so it was really cool because I think the first time I went to New York City, I think I didn't really go. I don't think I was near Central Park. But this time when I went to the Natural History Museum, we like went for a walk and everything. It was really nice. And it was like in February, but it wasn't snowing at all or anything. And I mean, that would have been cool too, but
Central Park has a definite like energy to it. And that's what I also find, you know, when you have, you know, like old rocks or fossils, you also have like really old trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's something I wish I could do while I'm in California because redwoods are just, my friend recently went and saw redwoods and apparently they grow in communities.
Yeah.
So if like one of them is sick, they'll like kind of shift almost around or like the root system will like adapt to the sick one.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I haven't been
since I was a kid.
I've
I definitely have like memory. Like those, that definitely makes an impression when you see like the tallest trees in the world kind of thing.
No. And I don't know what kind of trees were. I feel like it was mostly conifers when dinosaurs were.
Oh yeah. It was like ferns and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, anytime I see a fern, I'm like,
You're a dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I watched the birds episode of Planet Earth, mm-hmm. and the first time I watched it, like, I was so high that I like all I could think about were dinosaurs. Like the whole time, I'm just like, I'm watching dinosaurs right now.
Yeah, you're watching dinosaurs do this thing.
Yeah, and it was amazing. For pets, you know, I think I would probably adopt a pet from, you know, a shelter. And not
adopt, like, don't shop dinosaurs.
Yeah, but you know, when you think about different like mixed breed dogs, right?
Yeah.
Like in a sense, maybe like the breed itself is what's unnatural. You know what I mean? Like when you think about like pugs or something, or like certain dogs that have been bred to look a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's maybe more unnatural than, you know, like a golden retriever.
Yeah, yeah.
And like a poodle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like golden doodles are probably less unnatural than pugs. I really don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
But I feel like animal hybrids will occur in nature sometimes.
Now I'm curious, like, if, you know, because Henry Wu made the dinosaurs with, like, you know, filling in the gaps with other animals' DNA,
yeah.
if that's why they were able to survive, because they weren't necessarily just like the... But it's... I think I'm mixing it up because it's like we domesticated, you know, breeds that way, like we chose them that way, where it's like probably dinosaurs were a little more sturdy because they were just evolving and hybriding where they, you know, because, you know, like how many different types of, you know, I don't know. And I don't know if anybody knows necessarily, like, I'm sure there was like a Triceratops and like a Nasutoceratops, you know, like the different horned ones maybe could mate together or something. Or like,
I wonder, I'm sure we can find this out.
Yeah.
There's no way we cannot find this out. Yeah. That's really kind of fascinating because like when you think about how dinosaurs evolved, you know, like, you know, birds are really like descendants from dinosaurs. Like how?
Yeah. Well, and it's that thing of like, because I think when people who like deny evolution or whatever, they're like, where's the in between? And I don't mean to do that accent, but like, but you know, it's like, but no, it's a gradual thing over
absolutely
thousands of millions of years. So you're never going to find the, like the missing link or whatever. It's so gradual that like, it's almost,
oh, absolutely.
Cause you know, I mean, I learned recently that like not all dinosaurs necessarily like turn to oil, but there's a great podcast called Common Descent, which is like, ooh, about evolution and about like different paleontology stuff.
I love that.
But they're recently finding a bias in the fossil record that for some reason, like 70% of certain animals, they've only found like male fossils. And they're like, why? Like, yeah, where is that weird bias coming from? So then is like literally our entire fossil record, like male focus, like it's just
that's
like,
fascinating.
Which is like, so then is our entire picture of the world based on this? It almost feels like it, you know, with our society. I mean, our society, but then if it extends into the, like the actual fossil record of like everything we know is based off of being this male centric thing, like then it's even more like not actually the true picture of the world, you know?
It's funny. I saw this meme the other day and I really firmly believe that, you know, memes are not facts. I believe that. Memes are not facts, but it was like this thing where they, you know, it was in some like biology class and the professor held up like a photo of a bone with 28 lines like kind of scraped into it. And it was supposed to be the first calendar. And what they said was like, but why, you know, and like man made the first calendar, but like, why would a man mark 28 days? Like, what is a man like? That's so probably the first calendar was made by a woman. And I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense.
Why?
Well, because that's like a cycle.
Oh, that's what I was. That's right. I was like, it's about her period, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. And like, that's so fascinating. But and so if that's true, like that's been written out of our narratives of, you know, time and creation of our own like human consciousness, I guess.
Yeah. So much of it has been developed over that has also evolved in a sense too.
Yeah.
With those kinds of biases and things like that.
And then it's so interesting to think about in like Jurassic Park, like how all the animals are female too.
Well, it's interesting because in a way, I was on a really great podcast called the Bechdel Cast. And my friends, Caitlin and Jamie, they're going to come on this podcast pretty soon, both
amazing
of them. But it was kind of this idea of like, okay, like all the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park are female.
Does that mean it passes the Bechdel test?
Well, yeah. Yeah, because you see two raptors talking to each other.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
But also the idea of like, has actually any of these Jurassic Park movies actually played with that idea of all the dinosaurs being female in an actual way that's meaningful? Or is it more of like, it's there, but it's not really affecting things?
No. And
I mean, and I don't know either, but
you know, and there's so many series that I love that I think also fail in representation, you know, and that's something that I think is a benefit to remaking a series is kind of like working on shifting that and changing that.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I feel like Jurassic Park in the way that the dinosaurs are female in a way that's like more meaningful or fun is that like, you know, talking like, you know, speaking of memes of like, you know, here are like these female role models and it's like Rexy from Jurassic Park, you know, or Blue
totally,
or something.
Totally.
So in those ways, it's like, but yeah, I, you know, it's also hard when you talk about like gender stuff with humans and then, but talking about gender stuff with animals, it feels like, I don't know how to parse it all out and stuff like that.
It's so funny because like I remember being a kid and learning that female tigers were bigger than male tigers or any species where like the female was bigger or, you know, that the lionesses are the ones that do the hunting. And that was such an empowering thing for me to learn, you know, and I know that, you know, obviously like the barriers of gender dynamics are very different in the animal kingdom that like we're not a part of.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think there's like a lot that we can take from that. I mean, that's the thing about the series, too, that I found so, I don't know, like Sattler, she gets it done. She really does. And I mean, I think that, like, the thing about like, you know, her genderedness in Jurassic Park is that it's, you know, she's not, like, goading him into having kids, but she is so maternal, and it's kind of, like, his journey to finding his, like, paternal instincts.
Yeah, but I it's almost like it's
instincts,
nice.
Instincts, I mean, that's very...
instincts. But it's nice that I feel like her character isn't based on her
maternity,
desire. There's nobody, like, her character isn't based around her maternal stuff. Like, it's just...
No.
It's more of, like... He's the one who he's based on that tension.
Yes.
And it's like, she's only there to be like, I'm like, whatever.
Right.
Know? Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like,
or maybe she knows that he, you know, like, I don't know. Sometimes I love fan theories, but then also sometimes I'm like, how deep are you going to dive into something that maybe didn't, like, some, you know, sometimes I'm like, how deep are we reading? Is there a way to read too deeply into something?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. But maybe, you know, that's something she knew was in him.
Yeah.
You know, like, she knew it was in him to, like, have those, you know, even though he's mean to that kid.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting to make a movie where somebody who, but I think that was such, like, the difference between the book and the movie is that, like, that's such an interesting tension of, like, somebody who likes dinosaurs but doesn't like kids, you know?
Right.
Because that feels like, at least on the surface, it feels very, like, opposite. Because even in the original book, the character of Grant loved kids, you know?
Right. And so, that's an interesting choice to make, to, like, bring into it, I guess.
Yeah. Because I always think, like, having kids in Jurassic Park is essential because it's, that's where it all starts. So it's like.
Absolutely.
It just, to me, when I see, like, we just did a Halloween episode about Carnosaur 2. I guess that has kind of a kid in it. He's more of like a moody 90s kid. But
sure,
like,
that counts.
But, you know, it's like, I don't know if I would want to see Jurassic Park stuff without kids. I feel like that's the kind of contrast between the way the adults perceive it and, again, keeping in touch with your inner child. And it's like externalized by, like, actually having kids around, even though it maybe doesn't make sense that kids would get into these situations, but...
No, but, I mean, I think that that's also usually the first way we come in contact with dinosaurs, or the idea of dinosaurs is, like, when we're kids, and there's so much imagination to be sparked because we can interact with them.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, like, there's so much of that imagination that, like, would be involved in, like, creating a universe where dinosaurs are real.
Yeah.
Aw. Damn.
I mean, they are real in our heart.
Yes. I mean, and they were real, so that counts.
Yeah,
as being real.
Yeah, of course.
Aw.
This has been so much fun.
I love this.
If somebody handed you the keys and they were like, you have to argue the case for or against, like, we're in like junior high school debate class. Like,
amazing.
What, like,
I did Model UN.
Oh,
better
perfect.
Or worse.
Yeah, like, is there a compelling reason to bring dinosaurs to life? Like, if you had to argue pro or con?
You know, I would argue con in that but you want me to argue pro? Because that would be trickier. But
no, whichever one you actually feel.
Okay. I think that just, like, with the state of the environment now, I think our efforts should be geared towards conservation and not, you know, trying to bring back what's extinct for really, like, the hubris of proving that we can do it. As much as I would want to interact with dinosaurs and, you know, see hatchlings and have that experience, I think it would be, you know, socially and environmentally irresponsible.
No, that makes sense.
But also sad.
How do you feel when you think about dinosaurs?
Exhilarated is the first word that comes to mind. Because it's also that, like, we're not, when you think about, like, the, like, they're so massive. They're so massive. And I feel like we love big things. We love tall buildings. We love tall trees. You know, we love, you know, experiencing something that's so astronomically bigger than ourselves. And dinosaurs, like, that's, you know. And also that, like, it does really, like, it does spark your imagination to think about things that existed and then now don't. And, yeah.
That's cool. I love that answer. I mean, the obvious question, again, thank you so much for doing this. It's
of
been
course.
So much fun.
I love it.
Would you go to Jurassic Park if it existed today?
Yes, of course.
I know we talked about the morality of stuff, but it's just...
I feel that way with zoos, too. But I also think there's a way to have a facility that houses wild animals that is, you know, focused on conservation and also is, you know, as humane as possible.
Yeah.
What I also loved about Jurassic Park in the movie is how much space they had. And they understood, like, their point was not to domesticate them. It was to, like, let them be what they are and let them be wild.
Yes.
And give them that space.
Yeah, it's not a circus where they're, like, literally just crammed up against the cage. It's
no.
like the first the whole point of, like, the first part of Jurassic Park is that literally none of the dinosaurs can be seen because they have such open,
exactly.
beautiful habitats.
And good. Let them have it.
Yeah.
And herds. That's how you can have actual herds. And that's also how you can have, you know, inter-animal relationships, which I think is so important.
Oh, yeah. That's why I really like the safari park and why it's come a long way in terms of conservation is because it is allowing, down in San Diego, it's allowing the giraffes and deer and rhinos and kind of all these animals to kind of coexist together because that's how they do in real life.
I have to go.
It's in.
Oh, my God.
And the thing, too, it's like, this is my soapbox as far as defending the San Diego Zoo and why it's such an important, because it is really focused on conservation and being like, look, either we're going to, our mission is to help animals get back in the wild, or if they can't, then here's a place where they can rest and we can study. And then we can also study these animals in a way that they can help us create better relationships and with people on the outside. So that if we do want to, you know, it's a whole thing I can go on.
No, but totally. And I also feel that, you know, you have to get people engaged, and it's hard to get people engaged when they can't interact with something in person, you know? So, like, when you have a space that they can actually see that, like, I think that ends up, you know, like, anytime you go to the Bronx Zoo, before you go into the gorilla, you know, what's it called? Enclosure?
Enclosure, yeah.
You know, you have to watch, like, a little documentary about conservation and what's going on, you know, in the Congo and all this stuff. And it really, like, tugs at you makes you, like, emotionally invested in the environment that they're from. So I think, yes, I would 100% go to Jurassic Park.
I mean, if I had to say that I had to get eaten in order to go, then I would go.
I'd still go.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is one of my questions, which is, if you could be killed by a dinosaur, which one and how would you go?
I'm going to say, like, probably Diplodocus, like the, you know, sea.
You're going swimming.
You know what it is? Like, it would be done so fast. Like, it would be done so fast. Or maybe a raptor, only because, like, it would be, like, horrifying. But I would assume that they would probably kill me the same way that, like, a cat would. Like, not like a house cat. Like, you know, like lions. So they probably would go from my jugular. So I would be out quick and I wouldn't have a lot of memory from, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't suffer for a long time.
Sure.
They would just, like, cut off my circulation. I'd be dead. I'm really putting a lot of thought into this.
I mean,
but yeah, those are the two, I think.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, quick and easy.
Yeah, no, I like that.
What about you?
I mean, part of me just wants to get stepped on. Like, even totally, like by a sauropod. Like, I don't even need to be eaten by a predator. I could just have a brachiosaurus just be like, you're so beautiful.
That's,
smush.
Totally.
And that would be fast, too.
That would be fast. All right, that's a good answer.
I know you haven't seen Fallen Kingdom yet, but basically, like, I think you're familiar with just the idea that it's about saving the dinosaurs and stuff. And but I feel like I already know this answer, that it's just, you wouldn't let them die. Like, under any circumstances, would you, you know?
It's hard. It depends on who is at risk. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. If they let a bunch of dinosaurs go in an old folks home, that seems pretty seems pretty irresponsible.
No, but like, you know, like if you have dinosaurs, let's say like in a city, like that's not gonna work.
Yeah.
You know, I would want to save the dinosaurs. I would 100% want to save the dinosaurs. And I would also want to like make sure that people were putting efforts in place to like have functional spaces for all creatures. I realize that's very ambitious thinking, but that's the
you would
dream.
You'd make it work.
I would, if I was, you know, like emperor of the universe at that point and I had the final say, we'd be good. And so would the dinosaurs.
That's a great answer. So then if we have this world where we're with dinosaurs, like what would you... You're living your life now, but now there are dinosaurs in it. Like, how would they be in your life?
How would they be in my life? All right. So there's a park that I used to go to a lot near my hometown where instead of using lawnmowers, they actually would have like, they had like a little group of little pygmy goats.
What?
They would just walk around the path and they would chew like, they would keep the paths clear. Instead of using lawnmowers, they would just like eat the grass on like the sides of the path and... So I think there could be like very humane ways to like have dinosaurs help us with farming and like fertilizing and things like that. I don't know. I'm sure we would have excess of dinosaur shit that could be put to good use.
Oh, yeah.
And also we would probably have to plant more trees if dinosaurs were around. So I would be down to work in the, you know, I've honestly like my dream, yes, is to like, you know, the music is my life and it's my dream and I love it. But one day I just want to like retire and be a park ranger. I really think that would be great. So I would like to be, you know, a dinosaur park ranger.
Well, yeah, at that point, if dinosaurs are coexisting, like that's exactly on the horizon. You
exactly.
Know? So you can have that or, you know, in between tours and things.
Exactly. You know.
There's plenty of musicians who it's like when they're after tour life, they'll go in the woods for like a month or 2 months.
Exactly.
To kind of
I would have a cabin in, you know, the dinosaur preserve park.
you would basically have the Bon Iver cabin, but with dinosaurs.
Exactly. And like in the morning, you know, like how they have those hotels where like giraffes come and eat at your room or whatever.
Yeah.
That would be that with like, you know, stegosaurus.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm down.
Well, this has been super awesome.
This has been so fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Kira.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yay.
Thank you again for listening. As I mentioned, this show, See Jurassic Right, is constantly evolving, but I want to talk about the things that also matter to you in addition to finding the wild corners of the Jurassic Park web that interest me. Say hi. Thank you again so, so, so very much to my guest, Kira Metcalf, for waiting this long for me to finally release this episode. To the other guests I recorded with right on the border of lockdown and yet to release, yours are coming soon too, I promise. Like my Abigail Irvin Penner episode from 2019, I had to get some Jurassic viewing updates from Kira.
Okay, so since last we spoke, 1 million billion years ago, I have since watched Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and do I think it's as good as the original? No. Do I think that it seems like Jeff Goldblum is literally reading the lines from his script before every take? Absolutely. Do I think it's a romp that is over the top and ridiculous and peril-seeking and exaggerated with, you know, less than stellar dialogue, but an almost campy over-the-topness? Yes, and I loved it, and I would watch it a million times over. In fact, I think I need to go do that right now. I do still like it more than Jurassic World, even though I thought the dinosaurs looked rad. I could not abide Bryce Dallas Howard running around in heels or Chris Pratt in any capacity. But yeah, I thought The Lost World was just so special and so delightfully silly and seemingly more unrealistic than the original somehow. And like Julianne Moore, Richard Schiff, I mean, Vince Vaughn, Jeff Goldblum for his stellar return, and also I live for Pete Postlethwaite. So yes, all in all, I'm glad that since in the time since we spoke, I have redeemed myself by watching the next movie in the series and did not regret it.
And as a reminder to both of us, we did a bit of Lord of the Rings chat way back when this episode was recorded in 2019 on Minisode 27 due to the news at the time that Jurassic World Fallen Kingdoms, J.A. Bayona, would be directing the first two episodes of the Amazon Prime Lord of the Rings prequel series, The Rings of Power, which season one has since come out. Go check out my review. I really enjoyed the Peter Jackson, the Make It Sexier vibes, the in the place of a dark lord, you should have a queen mood that pervades the show. Basically, the steamier junk drawer of Tolkien lore. I'm excited for season two. Follow Kira at Kira Metcalf on all things. Links in the show notes. She has a show coming up on April 18th, next week, the day after my birthday, live at Rubelod in NYC. I'll have a link to tickets to that as well. Follow me at Steven Ray Morris on all things. If you feel like fighting the algorithm gods with me, please support the show by sharing the post on social, commenting, and consider donating $1 or $5 to me on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright, to keep the power on in this park. Hold on to your butts, and I'll see you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.